Hi, everybody. We hope you're enjoying a great holiday season, a great holiday weekend. Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah to all. This is our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Great to be with you all this week. I am Hub Arkish, the editor and GM at Pro Football Weekly, our managing editor, Arthur Arkish, alongside. And plenty going on with the Chicago Bears. Unfortunately, it continues to be somewhat frustrating for many Bears fans, I know, but we are delighted to be with you to talk about it all. We are brought to you again this week by Loot Crate. The best surprise you know is coming, so be sure and get to lootcrate.com. Could be a real fun holiday gift for those last-minute folks you haven't been able to take care of yet. Again, at lootcrate.com, the best surprise you know is coming. And, Arthur, I can't say that I'm surprised there are no Chicago Bears in the Pro Bowl. I am mildly surprised that Akeem Hicks didn't make it, only because he clearly deserved it. Other than Aaron Donald, there's nobody in the NFL, an interior defensive lineman, who deserved it more. You know, Calais Campbell's in the other conference, so I thought it would clear the way for him. Got no argument with Fletcher Cox. He's a great player, hasn't had the season that Akeem Hicks has. Gerald McCoy is another great player who hasn't had the season that Akeem Hicks has. But the news that Akeem Hicks is just the fourth alternate I found absolutely stunning, and you begin to wonder after a while what people are watching. We know that this is nothing more than a popularity contest, but still, when a guy sticks out and dominates the way that Hicks did at least 9 or 10 times out of the first 14 weeks before the voting concluded, I was really disappointed that he wasn't at least the first alternate.
Well, in the name that stuck out ahead of Akeem Hicks, and hello to all our listeners, thanks for being with us and happy holidays. I think the name that stuck out in front of Hicks for the starters, much less the three alternates, because it's harder to track those down. I'd be lying if I said who the numbers 1 through 3 alternates were. But Gerald McCoy is also on a bad football team, and he has missed a little bit of time. His numbers, just apples to apples, don't stack up against Akeem Hicks. So I think it gets back to the popularity contest you alluded to. Obviously, Fletcher Cox and Aaron Donald, not only division title clubs, but just wrecking things on a weekly basis, kind of like Akeem Hicks. So it's disappointing. You look for those silver linings in a season like this, and I think we all thought, us who are fortunate to get to watch Akeem play every week, that certainly he's played at a Pro Bowl caliber level, but he's going to have to settle for being a fourth alternate. And he was not happy about it. To hear Akeem tell it, he thought that he got kind of gypped by the fact that he was lumped in with defensive ends versus interior linemen. All due respect to Akeem, I'm not sure he's right about that, but if that is the case, I guess it would make it even more, it'd make it a tougher putt for him, because then you're getting in there with guys like, I believe, Everson Griffin, and I don't know where Chandler Jones fell, whether he was an edge or defensive ends, but obviously the competition gets a little bit more packed.
Yeah, no, I think his point was well taken, only because Cox and Donald are, well, actually, Cox is an anchor
tackle.
Those
are the interior guys, so I'm not sure technically, I mean, he must know. He got the call and said you're an alternate. Maybe he was viewed as a defensive end, which is ridiculous, because he plays most of his snaps at the 3 technique, if not on the nose, where he's had some production this year as well.
Right. My understanding, maybe we're interpreting what he said differently, because my understanding is he is an alternate as an interior lineman, but I think his point was that because he's listed as a defensive end, mm-hmm. he didn't get considered for defensive tackle votes the way the pure defensive tackles did. Mm-hmm. But again, I wasn't there when he gave, had his meeting with the
rest
of the
locker. He had a better argument, Hub. Sorry to cut you up, but I know where we're going to next is Jordan Howard, and he's had an excellent season, even despite the fact the Bears don't know how to use him on a weekly basis. But Akeem had a better argument than Jordan Howard, because those, in my opinion, I know I read your column last night, I know what you think. I'm not of the same opinion, so why don't you go ahead and say why you think Jordan Howard should be in the Pro Bowl over a certain Saint?
Well, just to finish that other thought, though, in other comments that Hicks made, he compared his numbers to Damon Snacks Harrison, who's sure. another guy in a similar situation, although he also plays inside purely. So I think the point he was trying to make is that it's hard for a 5 technique to make it.
Okay.
And he's actually correct. I mean, Calais Campbell, you can't miss, got a chance to be the defensive MVP. But other than that, these 5 techniques find themselves in a tough spot. Now, actually, you and I don't really disagree. I think that Jordan Howard and Kyle Fuller both deserve to be Pro Bowlers. They're the only other two Bears that should have been considered.
Okay.
Jordan Howard lost out to Todd Gurley, who deserves to be a Pro Bowler, and then to two New Orleans Saints,
yep.
Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara, who both are having great seasons.
Yep.
And so my only point there was I don't think they would have taken two backs from the same team over Howard if the Saints weren't 10-4 and the Bears weren't 4-10.
Yeah, I could see that. Ingram's averaging 5.1 yards per carry, though, and he does more in the passing game than Jordan Howard, so we just have to call it like it is.
Yeah, but he has less rushing yards, and he doesn't do that much more in the passing game than Howard. The guy who does a lot more in the passing game than Howard is Kamara, but Kamara doesn't have anywhere near the rushing production. And so I do not believe that Kamara or Ingram got lucky, and particularly if you look at the Akeem Hicks argument, these are guys that have never made it before. So, so these are guys who overcame the popularity contest. I just think it was a tough year in the NFC to pick a running back. And I think if your point is the best, if the Bears had any clue how to use Jordan Howard, he would have been a runaway because he should be leading the NFC in rushing by 300-400 yards.
Sure. And other guys, Devonta Freeman beat out Jordan Howard last year. He didn't get in either. So it was a crowded field. And this isn't just the best backfield in football this season. This Saints backfield is, I think, one of the best. It's one of the best I can remember in a long time. In what Alvin Kamara is doing, just from an efficiency standpoint, from a scoring standpoint, is unlike anything we've seen, frankly, since some other Hall of Famers have come into the league.
And again, my understanding, because I was doing some digging last night, is that Howard is the first alternate.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I can't. I think it's too bad for Howard, you know, but. You know, you can't make an argument that those other guys don't deserve it. I don't think Gerald McCoy deserves it over the guys who are in.
I believe Tariq Cohenhub, too, also an alternate, I'm sure, as a returner. So what it comes down to is Kyle Fuller is probably the guy who really maybe got the short end of the stick here.
He did, you know, because as near as we can tell, he's not even an alternate. But this is everything you need to know about what a joke the Pro Bowl is. Not only is Tariq Cohen the second alternate as a returner, but Kyle Long is the second alternate guard. And I love Kyle Long, and I believe Kyle Long is going to have three or four more Pro Bowl seasons for the Bears. But for him to even get a vote this year is silly. You know, nobody was watching. I mean, he wasn't on the field.
And he didn't deserve – I don't want to say he didn't deserve his second Pro Bowl, the year he spent at right tackle, I think we would probably agree, was curious at best. And you won't find bigger, I don't want to say Kyle Long fans, we're not supposed to be fans, but just easier guys to root for, better guys in that locker room. And I know we're going to talk about Kyle a little bit more here in a minute.
Well, and I think it's a compliment to Kyle Long because
absolutely,
it tells you what a dominant player he is when he's on the field. He is a rare physical specimen, and that's why you continue to get so excited about this guy. I still don't know that he doesn't belong at left tackle. But at the end of the day, you know, Kyle Long's a great football player who, unfortunately, due to injuries, should have never been considered for a Pro Bowl this year. And yet, you know, he's considered the fifth best guard in football when he's not even playing. But then to get to Kyle Fuller, I can't get too upset about it when I look at who made the Pro Bowl.
Sure.
I mean, you talk about Patrick Peterson is probably the best cornerback in the NFC right now. And then I look at Xavier Rhodes, who I did two of his games on the sidelines for Westwood One. Guy's unbelievable in man coverage. Darius Slay, pretty much the same story. And then Marshawn Lattimore, who I haven't really seen, a rookie who everybody's raving about. He probably is one who's a product, again, of media buzz, and I don't know that he's had as good or a better season than Kyle Fuller, but he certainly has had a great season. And so you're talking about a very good year for cornerbacks in the NFC, and relative to Pro Bowl selections, Fuller just picked the wrong year to have a breakout season.
Yeah, this isn't a Saints podcast, but maybe we need to do one separately because Alvin Kamara, Ryan Ramczyk, Marshawn Lattimore, if that's not the best rookie draft class in the NFL this season, I don't know what is. But again, we're not really here to talk Saints. And we did do a Pro Bowl snub column on ProFootballWeekly.com if people want to check it out. I actually thought the other rookie corner, Tre'Davious White, belonged to be in the game too. But obviously, this is supposed to be Bears-centric hub. And you hit on Kyle Long. I don't know if we need to go there next, but we certainly do need to go there because, in my opinion, it's the biggest news of the week.
Well, yeah, certainly it's not stunning. You know, we knew he was on IR. We expected him to be having some surgery. But throughout the various injury reports all season long, there was never any mention of a neck issue. And it turns out that the surgery that he had is to repair a herniated disc in his neck. Now, as someone, and tried to keep this quiet, I don't want to make a big deal out of it, but I actually had some major neck surgery just 8 weeks ago, and had three discs fused, and so this is a subject I know a little bit about. I have not spoken to Kyle. I don't know exactly what procedure he had or why it was done or how it showed itself. But I can tell you what a herniated disc in your neck can do. And I can tell you that it could have come, as I believe the one explanation that was offered is apparently got a quote from where he said that it may have come from overcompensating for the bad shoulder. It's possible. It may have also contributed to the bad shoulder. You just don't know. But when you have herniated discs in your neck, we are talking about a level of discomfort previously unknown to mankind until you've suffered with it. And there are different levels of it. But if it was bad enough to require surgery, it just makes Kyle Long that much more heroic in my mind for having been on the field at all this year.
Yeah, Kyle was very introspective on social media. That's where those quotes came from. He shot a picture, I believe, on Instagram Tuesday night with him in his hospital gown and getting ready to have surgery. Or I guess he is just coming out of surgery because he had the big brace on his neck. And everyone should go check out Kyle's Twitter feed just to see him sort of explaining how he's excited to finally get healthy again, excited about the future of this team. But he didn't really mince words in saying that he put off the shoulder surgery last offseason. And he was trying to kind of help the team. And this year he wasn't 100% heading into the year. Obviously missed the first two games with the ankle, but again, wanted to be there for his team. So you could sense some frustration. He mentioned a position change as well, too. And you could tell that he is frustrated. And at the same time, if anyone questions Kyle Long's toughness, and I've seen people do it on Twitter, and it is just about as asinine as it gets, just looking at the laundry list of things he's had to deal with, should remove anyone even having that thought in their brain moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the thing that angered him was the last game before he went down, when he was on the sidelines with a baseball hat on, got in for the one play in special teams because somebody got banged up. And not only fans, but, I do pre- and post-game on the score here in Chicago. In post-game, I work with Olin Krutz and James Big Cat Williams, two of the best Bears offensive linemen of the modern era.
Yep.
And they didn't question his toughness, but they did question the wisdom of either forcing him to or having him there in uniform on the sideline with a hat on if he wasn't going to play.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I know all that gets back to everybody. I've never met a player who didn't claim to read and listen to nothing in the media who didn't read and listen to all of it. I mean, and it's human nature.
And Kyle actually admits very openly he does read everything. And again, he's a very present social media figure, and he sees it all.
It's human nature, and they should, and I admire him for not responding to it and claiming they don't look at it. That's not my point here. My point is that stuff gets back to him, and when you hear guys who you admire and respect questioning the wit, and again, Olin and Kat did not question his toughness. They just questioned the wisdom of that decision to have him suited up there and stand there in the baseball cap, and when that stuff happens and it gets back to them, it's going to hurt their feelings or make them wonder a little bit. And then there was the issue of John Fox saying flat out he was healthy, I'm guessing that bothered him a little bit because he obviously wasn't healthy. Now, I know Kyle, I guess, a little better than some. And from the moment that morning started and they said he was active, it seemed to me the only truth could be that because he's the toughest guy on the roster and because Tom Compton and Brad Soule were both hurt that week, that he volunteered for that duty and was willing to take the grief. And obviously that's what happened. And if there's anything Bears fans should know, it's that if Kyle Long can get healthy again, he's one of the best offensive linemen in football. And whatever Kyle Long's issues are, toughness and want-to are not two of them.
Maybe the fact that he was active in that game is really a microcosm of the Bears' John Fox tenure and that they literally haven't had enough healthy bodies, and maybe they didn't have a choice but to dress Kyle even they knew he wasn't really going to be able to contribute. I don't know what the exact quote was. I do know that John Fox had a pretty snippy remark about Pernell McPhee yesterday. Pernell McPhee went to injured reserve with a shoulder injury. It probably is going to end his Bears tenure, I would think. He's got a $7+ million salary next year. They can save almost all of it against the cap by cutting him. But I don't remember, you were at Hallis, you know how, or no, we weren't at Hallis, but we know how the question, we don't know exactly how the question was framed. We do know John Fox said, yeah, maybe the best way to keep Pernell McPhee healthy was to keep him in the trainer's room. And I'll let you
Well, I actually checked with two people who were there, because when I'm not there, if a guy's quoted, he's quoted. It's fair game to use that quote.
Sure. Context is important.
But there is context. Yep. And so when you're going to go after one like this, if you're doing your job right, you got to check.
Absolutely.
And I talked to a couple guys who were there. There's no question about it. You know, Fox was a little fed up at this point. He was asked, you know, is there any way to keep Pernell McPhee healthy? He's tired of the question. He said, yeah, leave him in the training room. That's not the whole quote, but that's exactly the way the quote starts, is he probably should have stayed in the training room. Mm-hmm. And it went on from there, you know. And he's not anti-Pernell McPhee. Again, John Fox is not questioning the toughness of Pernell McPhee. But at this point, you got a three-year history of injuries on a guy. And Arthur, I get crap in some corners around Chicago in the Midwest for this. I also have people who agree with me. I still continue to be a Ryan Pace defender. I like in his body of work more of what he's done than what he's missed on. But one of his biggest misses, everybody talks about Mike Glennon, Pernell McPhee probably should have been a medical reject. It sounded great at the time. The first half of that first year before the knees went south, you know, it looked like they really had something there. But I reported at the time that I had sources in Baltimore who told me there's no way the Ravens would have let him out of town if his knees weren't shot.
Yep.
This is a shoulder, not a knee. And so you could tell that after 3 years that Fox had had enough of the Pernell McPhee questions.
Look, you don't want to spend whatever it was, $17 million guaranteed. I think the deal was something like 5 years and $40 million. A little less than half of that guaranteed. You don't want to spend that to clean up your locker room, but Pernell McPhee's been a good addition to the locker room, at least. And we saw in that first eight games, I'm not being a Ryan Pace apologist here. I've said on this podcast, I think his free agency track record is bordering on awful, but I also think he's earned the right to hire the next head coach, because I think his hands have been tied, and I think the draft record offsets a lot of the free agent work. That being said, McPhee was dominant in the first eight games before the knee issues crept up again, whether they were always there and whether that was a fait accompli. You know, I know we reported that and stand behind it. But Pernell, when he's been on the field, actually, even on a pitch count in the past couple years, he's still been a producer. So maybe that's not the number one. For a lot of people, they'll probably look at that contract as the biggest albatross. I'm not sure I would entirely agree with that.
Yeah, I don't want to change the topic here, but I do have to, again, context. It's all about batting averages, because we just spent the first 10 minutes of this podcast talking about a free agent of Ryan Pace's who got screwed out of the Pro Bowl. Josh Sitton went to a Pro Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
Danny Trevathan would if he was healthy. Sam Acho, interestingly enough, nobody talks about, has obviously been he's had some big misses. There's no question about that. But again, that's not what we're talking about right now. We're going to have plenty of time on that in the next couple of weeks. You know, at the end of the day, I don't think there is any chance that John Fox is going to be here. I don't think there is any chance that Ryan Pace is going to be gone. If I'm correct, Ryan Pace and whoever his new staff are have to do a whole lot better this offseason investigating their injury problem than they did last year. Because remember, this was a topic of discussion raised by Ryan Pace and John Fox the first day in Bourbonnais this year, that they really worked hard this year, because last year they led the NFL, tied for the lead with players on injured reserve, and led the NFL in starters games lost to injury.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to make it better this year. Well, they're not going to lead the NFL in players on IR, but I think right now they're tied for third or something like that. And starters games lost to injury, they're in the hunt again. So something – and listen, everybody's talking about injuries. It's the cover of Sports Illustrated this week. There's no question it's an issue. But still, when you have more than anybody else, you got to take a look and try and figure out a way to do better.
No doubt. And I don't know that either of us know what the exact answers are. I don't know that we know enough about the day-to-day, hour-to-hour operations of the training staff and the strength and conditioning guys, but everything, no stone should be left unturned, because you said that's been a big talking point for Ryan Pace, and frankly so is finding playmakers for the roster, and we just saw them get shut out of the Pro Bowl for the third year, which marks the entire Ryan Pace tenure, I believe. So there's a couple points of emphasis that are going to have to be re-emphasized if Ryan Pace does get a second chance here, which we both believe he's going to.
All right, so two other topics du jour, if you will, before we have to wrap this one up. One is Arthur is our managing editor, gets the first and last look at most of the copy, if not all the copy that hits print, that hits the website. And when I wrote my column following last Saturday's Bears-Lions game, he called me to double check. He's a little surprised that I was being as positive about Mitch Trubisky as I was. And so I sat there at Hallis Hall on Monday listening to John Fox,
chuckling,
thinking, I wonder if he read my column, mm-hmm. because both Fox on Monday and Dal Loggins.
And for the record, I still don't agree, but let's...
You know what?
John Fox said it was arguably Trubisky's best game despite the three interceptions, and Hub said he did take a definite step forward in that losing effort.
And let me get something on the record here about theoretically more, not so journalism. Well, it's journalism, but it's more, you know, the difference between columnists and reporters and this and that. But so everybody understands, our jobs as columnists are to come up with topics that we feel strongly about, that we can defend and support. And when we've really done it right, 50% of the readers agree, yeah. and 50% of the readers disagree.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's kind of where you want to be. In this particular case, I didn't think it was necessarily his best performance. Mm-hmm. What I wrote is the reps were important.
Right.
And he needed a game where he threw the ball 46
times. First 300-yard game.
You know, yeah, so yep. starting to do some of those things that other guys have to do every once in a while. But that's actually not where I wanted to go here. As I said, the two other topics du jour, one of them has been this idea of John Fox and Dowell Loggins that, oh, it was his best game. But the reason that it happened is they claimed whenever a team puts 8 or 9 in the box, you have to, you know, get away from the running game and throw the football. Well, that's not true. Not if you look at the good teams in the NFL. Teams like the New England Patriots, who are always near the top of the league in run-pass ratio, running the football, they know how to use the run to open up the pass. They know how to use the pass to open up the run. The Bears don't, and that's one of the reasons they're going to have a new coaching staff. If you show them 8 or 9 in the box in the first quarter and you stop the first 5 or 6 runs, that's it. You're done. And so now the best player on your football team, Jordan Howard, ceases to be a factor. And mm-hmm. so, again, back to our opening conversation about if Jordan Howard had been used properly, he'd have been a runaway first choice in the Pro Bowl. The Bears have not been able to find the correct offensive identity, offensive scheme, and we've never seen it better than we saw it last week in Detroit. It only took, you know, the better part of the first period for them to take Jordan Howard away. They never tried to go back to him, and that's why Mitch Trubisky ended up throwing the ball 46 times.
It's almost like the Bears and the Lions hadn't played 3 or 4 weeks earlier, and the Bears didn't have their best rushing day of the season. You know, that tape must not have been there to draw on for Dal Loggins and John Fox and company. It's beyond frustrating. I feel like we've been kind of broken records, but I think that's where this season has become. It feels like a bad case of deja vu in that the same things keep happening. You could throw the lack of discipline into the mix, certainly from last Saturday, season high 13 penalties, 92 yards. I believe half of them pre-snap penalties that John Fox admits are focus issues with his players. Well, that goes right back to the coach. So just, you know, it's just bad. It's been tough to watch, and Bears fans deserve better. And again, we only have 2 more of these to discuss. Hub, how can the Bears avoid being a footnote on the Browns' historically bad season? Because that is some inherent pressure, actually. I don't care if the Browns are 0-14, and maybe that increases the pressure on the Bears to make sure they don't go out and lay an egg on Christmas Eve in front of probably a half-full Soldier Field.
The Cleveland crowd. Browns' last NFL victory was Christmas Eve 2016. They lost to a San Diego Charger team at the time that strongly resembled this Chicago Bears team, not this year's Chargers, last year's Chargers. And if you want to know how they avoid being a footnote, that's your answer. And I think you said it near the top, Arthur. Akeem Hicks, without saying it, pretty much guaranteed a win. That's dangerous territory you don't want to be in. The Cleveland Browns clearly don't know how to win. The Bears are, what did I see, 5.5 or 6.5 point favorites?
Yep, 6.5 right now.
Everything about this says the Bears should win. Unfortunately, the one issue they have to deal with is the Cleveland Browns, the thing they do best, they don't do it great, but the thing they do best is stop the run on defense.
Mm-hmm.
They also know how to look at film. They're going to start with 8 or 9 guys in the box. And if the Chicago Bears decide to desert the Jordan Howard portion of the game plan again on Sunday, they're going to be a footnote on the Cleveland Browns 2017 season.
DeShone Kizer leads the NFL in turnovers, interceptions. He's got 19 of them. The Bears The Browns are a negative 24 in turnover differential. That is the worst in the NFL since the Chargers, actually, in 2000. That team went 1-15. So, but that doesn't mean they're not dangerous. Kizer can make plays with his arm and his legs. He has excellent talent outside on the perimeter. Josh Gordon versus Kyle Fuller is going to be exciting. Corey Coleman hasn't done much in recent weeks, but he's still a former top 20 pick who can hurt you if you let him. So it's weird because the Browns are 0-14 and they are horribly coached too. Yes, maybe they can look at film, but Hugh Jackson has been awful with that team. And yet there are some dangerous playmakers and there is some talent that needs to be accounted for to make sure that the Bears are able to take care of business.
So let's get to the final piece, Arthur. And you know what? The fact that DeShone Kizer is the runaway leader in the NFL in interceptions would be more exciting if the Bears weren't, I believe, once again tied for last in the league in interceptions. Yeah,
31st, so, I believe. Six total interceptions. Darius Slay got his sixth and seventh against the Bears last week.
All right. So the final piece of this story has to be Mitch Trubisky because he is from Mentor, Ohio, a middle-class suburb of Cleveland. He actually says that he grew up a Walter Payton and Bears fan, but also a Browns fan. He is loath to talk about being a Browns fan, doesn't want to own that. The game is here in Chicago. He's not going home. But the biggest piece of the story is that people have tried to resurrect this idea that Ryan Pace did make the right move in the trade he made to get Trubisky because the Browns were in action behind the scenes trying to make it happen. Now, I have confirmed, I don't know how many different ways, that that's not true. The Browns weren't going to make a trade, but nonetheless, probably wish they did right now. As a matter of fact, we're going to see Myles Garrett, who's a very exciting football player, but who has had a up-and-down rookie year, started with injury. That's not his fault. Blew out of the blocks, I believe, with a sack on his first play in the NFL.
Yep.
And then I want to say had three in his first two games and then disappeared for the next 4 weeks. And so it's going to be, you know, when you've got an 0-14 and a 4-10 team, you look for storylines. The storyline all day Sunday is going to be Mitch Trubisky Bear instead of Mitch Trubisky Brown, and where is he right now? So I'll come back to last Sunday. Trubisky is gaining steam fast. I wasn't anti-Trubisky when they drafted him because we didn't know enough about him. We only had those 13 game tapes. He has been better than I expected in almost every way that he can, and with where he is at right now, I think there is a very good chance that the Bears have finally found their quarterback of the future.
Yeah, I'm excited, too, by what I've seen. not only what you see on the field, but just by all accounts, how he has sort of taken the bull by the horns in terms of leadership and the kind of things you want to see off the field that we didn't see enough of during the Jay Cutler tenure. So very encouraged, but with this game specifically, he hasn't had to bounce back from a 3-turnover game yet, and that's where the focus starts, and I think he's going to have to be patient. It's going to be his own defense that's going to try and make him, you know, settle for stuff underneath up and down the field. And he's shown really good decision making, at least up until last week, and a couple bad mistakes. But the Browns aren't going to beat the Bears unless the Bears give them opportunities to, and that's going to be by another turnover fueled game that we expect to see from DeShone Kizer and we don't expect to see from Trubisky 2 weeks in a row.
All right, Arthur, so as we say goodbye for this week, I'm going to ask all of our listeners for a little bit of a favor. First, I want, this is not a favor, this you should do for yourself. Get to LootCrate.com. LootCrate, the best surprise you know is coming. If you've got some last-minute shopping to do, it'd be a really fun gift for those hard-to-shop-for folks on your list. And we want to thank the folks at LootCrate for being with us all year, and hopefully we'll have a long future together. And the favor that I want to ask all of you listeners is, due to the idiosyncrasies of the NFL season and scheduling, and this is not a complaint, it's just a reality, we all will be working all day Christmas Eve and good part of the day Christmas to bring you the NFL action at ProFootballWeekly.com. So please take a few minutes here and there and ask all of your friends to take a few minutes here and there to go to ProFootballWeekly.com, particularly on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day this year, to let our wives understand why we're working all day Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. We do our best to bring you all the NFL action as well or better than anybody else out there, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. We're going to be enjoying our Christmas and Hanukkah holidays with our families. We really hope that you guys are too. And we look forward to a painless end to the season for Chicago Bears fans, since this is Pro Football Weekly Chicago. Hopefully they can go out with a couple wins. Be with us all next week at ProFootballWeekly.com as we cover the build-up to Black Monday, not only for the Bears, but the entire NFL. And again, just one more time, we hope it's an outstanding holiday weekend for everybody out there. Be sure and go to iTunes, give us a review, subscribe if you can, and we will be back with another Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast next week. Merry Christmas, everybody. Coming down in 3, 2, 1. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Pro Football Weekly Chicago, our weekly podcast surrounding all things Chicago Bears and NFL. I am Arthur.
And I'm Hub Arkish, and we're so glad you're with us this week.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a website to keep you up to date on all the latest news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, look no further than ProFootballWeekly.com. It's the place for all the best news around the league. You'll find breaking news, hard-hitting columns, video, photos, podcasts, and more. All 32 teams, 24/7, 365 days a year. While you're at it, catch up with all things NFL in our newsletter. Our NFL Daily Update will send you all of the news you need to keep up with the pace of the NFL. You'll get news, analysis, and more sent right to your inbox at noon, Monday through Friday. Sign up now to start getting NFL news during the week. Pro Football Weekly, bringing the best coverage in the NFL to its readers since 1967. Are you following us on social media? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/ProFootballWeekly. Then head over to Twitter and follow PF Weekly and never miss an NFL update. There are plenty of ways for you to enjoy Pro Football Weekly, whether in print or online. If news breaks in the NFL, don't miss a thing and keep it at ProFootballWeekly.com.